Major League Baseball's 2024 regular season is already opened officially after this morning's game in Seoul, South Korea, the Dodgers beating the Padres 5-2 in that game. It's Kevin Barker in Florida, Jeff Blair here in our Toronto studio. It is Blair and Barker. You got two more days in Florida, Barker, eh? We're serving up great weather for you.
No sleeves.
Yeah. Well, you'll enjoy it.
My forehead's burned a little bit.
Yeah, enjoy it.
I'm squinting because it's really sunny here.
That's good. Enjoy it. I hope you got somebody shoveling out your walkway.
I can't wait to come home to that. It's tremendous. It's wonderful.
It's not that bad. Probably only be like.
That's not great.
It'd probably only be like 20 centimeters on the ground when you get home.
So traffic reports and weather. Stay hot.
You got to stop it with the traffic reports. Hey, how did Kevin Gausman look today? Do we have any reports on him?
He's pitching right now to Santiago Espinal. He has two up downs. He has 40 pitches. As we speak, I can actually hear the ball hitting the mitt. I have no idea. I'm here with you talking, and he's on field two. This is field one behind us right here.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to talk a little louder to let you guys hear me, and I didn't want to do it around field two. So I'm on field one. But as we speak right now, it seems like I saw him throwing or loosening up. I saw him in the cage here. There's a couple of mounds right here behind me to my left, to your right. He was loosening up. He seemed good. He was grunting, which I guess that's a good thing. So they're getting loose, and he's doing it as we speak. So
they haven't brought the gurney out, so he isn't hurt.
Hopefully not.
There you go. No. Well, it's already a good day. Jays and Braves this afternoon on Sportsnet. The Braves, they've got basically an opening day lineup. Acuna Jr., Ozzie Albies, Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Marcelo Zuna, Michael Harris II, Sean Murphy, Orlando Arcia, Jared Kalenich. They will face Bowden Francis. The Jays lineup, Ernie Clement, Vladdy Jr. The only reason Vladdy's making the road trip such as it is because they want to get him some at-bats. Vladdy Jr., Dalton Varsho, Daniel Vogelbeck, Davis Schneider, IKF, Eduardo Escobar, Nathan Lucas, and Brian Servin, Jays lineup. So really at this point in time, Kevin, I think the battle or the fight, however you want to describe it, for the 26th spot, that's going to play itself out. And this point is going to depend on a number of things. It certainly does seem as if Ernie Clement has made the team in some form. The bullpen, though, and not just because of what we heard yesterday with Jordan Romano being shut down for a couple of days and Eric Swanson being shut down for a couple of days, not just because of that, but the performance of Chad Green so far this spring. Now, we talked early about Jordan Romano, the closer, and how the Jays sent, I wouldn't call it a message, the Jays let us know something last year when they went out and got Jordan Hicks, and basically at the end of the year, we're relying on Jordan Hicks to close out games. And that, whatever, that,
fair.
That told us something. Mm-hmm. Of course, Jordan Hicks isn't there now. He's with San Francisco. We thought coming into spring training, I think we all did, that Chad Green, who was a guy who was signed before last year and basically just allowed to rehab. He was signed, I think, more than anything with an eye towards this year, more than anything else. I think a lot of us just assumed that Chad Green would be, frankly, he would be the guy if Jordan Romano can't go. Where is, it's not been a great spring, again, in terms of numbers for Chad Green. I don't know the velo. I mean, I've watched a couple of games. Chad Green's not a velo monster anyhow, but I got to tell you this. If the regular season started tonight, I don't know if I'd have a whole hell of a lot of confidence running him out in the ninth inning right now, Kevin.
Okay, let's be okay. First of all, aren't you the guy that always says spring training doesn't matter? And now all of a sudden you're saying
it matters. Here's the thing. It matters when you're a reliever and you are only getting 3, 4, or 5 batters a game. Yeah, then it matters. Then it matters. Okay, so, different. To me, it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care if a starting pitcher, if Bowden Francis goes up today and is gone in an inning and a third, I'm not going to be worried about that. He's still going to be starting for me. If Bo Bichette goes out, or Vladdy goes out today and goes 0 for 3, I don't care. Vladdy's still going to be in the lineup. But when you are a reliever, yeah, I think you need to see something from those guys because their opportunity to be used in games is limited.
See, this is why I tell you all the time that you've hit the jackpot by landing with me and me being your co-host is because I get information that I've been told is warranted when it comes to guys at the back end of the bullpen. And Jack Green is one of those guys where early in camp, it was the emphasis on the breaking ball. Find a grip, find mechanics, find extension on the breaking ball. You need that third pitch because of Tommy John. You may have lost a little tick on velocity. Let's face it, he wasn't a velocity monster, but he's got an invisible. Like, for whatever reason, he can throw 94 or 95 by a really good fastball hitter. And they think because of what they saw last year that maybe that would be a little bit of an issue going into this season. That's why they were saying, put a little bit more emphasis. Maybe you can steal some strikes to the breaking ball. Maybe you can throw a better breaking ball to a good left-handed hitter. And then you can throw your slider with two strikes, or you can quadrant your fastball, and the fastball will look harder because of the slower breaking ball. Yeah, that didn't work out. The breaking ball stinks. Like, it just ain't so good. And now sort of that's why you've seen the stats look the way they've looked, and his outings look the way they have looked, is because of the breaking ball. And now they've intimated that, and he's a two-pitch guy. He's back to the slider, the hard slider, and the fastball, the invisible. So I think you'll see a little bit better outcomes when he's throwing because of that reason. He's no longer worried about, you know, you saw him even in the times he pitched, he'd look down to see where the grip was at on the
yes,
on the curveball.
Was,
can't do that.
Yeah.
They can't do that.
Well,
like,
that's a tip off. Other guys are going to notice that if you're looking down to the grip, they're probably going to go, well, I mean, that, you know, that kind of is kind of a tip off as to what he's going to throw.
Absolutely. So yeah, I wouldn't read a whole lot into that. Again, this gets back to dude's got to step up. Like, when you don't have Jordan Romano as your closer, you know, Jordan Romano is predictable in the regular season. He's going to give it to you most of the time, and he's going to get most teams out and win the games that they're supposed to win by him pitching in the ninth inning. When you don't have him and you don't have your setup guy, now guys that were behind them or probably, you know, were coddled a little bit, given a chance to figure things out because you could use them in the sixth and seventh inning. Now you got to use them in the eighth and ninth inning. And that opens the door for, you know, the Zach Pops of the world and the Nate Pierce's of the world. They probably didn't want to put them dudes on the team, at least to start the season. But if Swanson starts on the IL and Jordan Romano doesn't bounce back from the elbow, it scares you. Dudes throw bazillion miles an hour, crossfire action, are not mechanically sound. Like, anytime you're talking about arms, this late in spring scares you. And now you got to step up, and hopefully the depth that they have can be good enough to, you know, ride out the ship and give the offense a chance and give them a chance to win some games. So, yeah, they got some maneuvering to do here, but hopefully the guys step up and get the job done.
So if, as it looks right now, I mean, I'm not going to say that these two guys aren't going to make the roster. We don't know that. But it's pretty clear from what you're saying. You know, Chad Green's going to get a more responsible role if that happens.
He had it anyway.
He had
it. I think they're just thrusting him into it a little earlier than they would like.
Fair enough. What does it mean? You mentioned Nate Pearson making the team. A guy that Pete Walker was really high on in the start of spring. A guy that other folks in the organization were pretty high on. A guy you talked about, and Pete mentioned him too, Brendan Little. What's happened to Brendan Little? It's almost like he is, I believe, scheduled to pitch today. I believe he's scheduled to pitch in the game today. But this is a guy that supposedly, you know, we were told that pretty good stuff. The organization liked him. Obviously, they brought him in. You just don't hear anything about him at all.
Yeah, I mean, look, nobody argues the stuff. It's the when you throw ball one, can you sort of bring down the mental hurdle of letting that escalate into throwing three or four or five more balls in a row. He's had some issues doing that.
And he does not inspire confidence. When you watch him on the mound, he looks like a guy ready to melt down. I mean, he just does.
And again,
I can't put it any other way.
again, it gets back to they're winning, like they are in win mode. It's not feelings, or it's not we brought this guy in and we're expected to put him on the roster. No, they're going to take the best to the games to win early. That's what it's about. They know they have to get off to a good start because of the way the Orioles look. Wow, they look some kind of good. And the Yankees, you know, even without Cole, they're going to score tons of runs. They're going to win more games than they won last year. So there's some competition there in the American League East to figure it out and figure it out early and be consistent. And that opens the door for Zach Pop. I know I talked to some people that are around Zach. He's, you know, a little bit more focused when it just comes to him. Focus on, you know, how do you get lefties out? How do you be a little bit more better at not throwing balls down the middle? Be mechanically sound, you know, make a quality pitch when you have to make it. Can you get two lefties out? Well, you know, will John and Pete Walker be comfortable enough to bring you in against two lefties and a righty? Well, last year you didn't want any part of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of, I think the work that he's put in and, you know, the quality of the pitch that he added, you know, I don't like the cutter as much as most people do. Sometimes it turns into sort of a BP fastball, and he can't afford to do that. It's like Mitch White. I just watched Mitch White throw a side here, and man, it's like throw a cutter slider thing, turn around to the khaki and ask him how much vertical it said on the iPad. It's a lot happening there. So it's just, you know,
is he going to be allowed to have the khaki on the field with him during the game, or what?
That's a great question. I mean it's like almost a crutch. It's like a, yeah. You know, it's like a security blanket. And again, I'm not saying don't use every tool that's given to you, but man alive, occasionally you just got to go, the work I put in is good enough. Like, ask the catcher. Catcher will tell you if it's breaking the way it's supposed to break. That's why I want to take Mitch White as serious as they do, but it's hard. I got off track there a little bit, but the gist of this thing is when you watch, say, a Trevor Richards and a Yusei Kikuchi that were on both sides of Mitch White in the middle of those two, and I was walking back and forth because I wanted to see what it looked like. And you can understand why nobody can hit that split change that Trevor Richards throws. That thing is nasty. He could tell you that thing's coming. He's throwing it slower too, which is, man, if he throws strike one, it is cancel Christmas. And then you watch Yusei, who acts, he's grunting, and man, he is getting after it. It's almost like he's in midseason form. And then you walk to Mitch, and it's like, what are we doing here? Like, it's TikTok, buddy, and you're probably going to make the team, and you're in the middle of whatever you're in the middle of. It's just, it's a lot happening there. So, you know, you wonder about, again, where they're at when it comes to certain guys in their pen. You're trying to fill in the blanks, puts a lot of pressure on your manager, and we all know how that happens and how that goes, and sometimes how that looks. Sometimes they have to overthink it, and again, we go full circle, Jeff. We've been doing this the last couple of days on the show. Talk about this pitch until we're blue in the face. This is what you do in spring. You walk around and watch all of this, and you're excited about the velocity and the break and all these things, and then I walk to field two at like 10:15, and you see Turner, Bo, Biggio, and Espinal with Matt Haig, Don Mattingly, and Martinez, and they're just sort of powwowing back and forth about, you know, Kevin Biggio's getting videotaped about the phone booth and stand taller, and Bo Bichette's talking about stretch and, you know, not leaning back on elevated fastballs, and you're talking back and forth, and Turner's a collision guy, and Espinal's being videotaped by Martinez. Like, there's just conversation back and forth. That's what spring training's all about. That gets you excited because the core, if you want to say it, just is trying to get it done and help out a pitching staff that, quite frankly, right now is limping. They're limping into the season, and they need help here, so hopefully that happens.
So you had a chance to see the Orioles yesterday. Prospect-laden Orioles lineup. First time you've seen Jackson Holliday, I think, in person. Yeah. You know Matt a little bit. I believe you know Matt a little bit from your playing days. Look, I mean, I'm not going to turn it into an Orioles love fest. I mean, we're already having fun with them, but, dude, he can play. He's fun to watch, isn't he?
Well, let's put it to you this way. Billy and Markham, you know, yelled at me a little bit the last time we took calls when I was in the office about who my pick was in the American League East. I've seen the Orioles up close and personal. I'm not picking the Yankees anymore.
Yeah.
The Orioles are in a class by themselves. They roll athleticism. It's oozing out of its pores in that organization. Like, you name a position, it's got it. And I just don't know any team in the American League East that can bring that. I'm talking about the Blue Jays, the Yankees, the Red Sox, you name it, the Rays, like, you name it. They just don't have it. And watching the Holiday up close and personal, I don't know this. You got to make the plays. Like, you can't be, if you're Bo Bichette, the first hitter, mm-hmm. he hits a one hopper to you because you've been positioned in the right spot. You can't be flat footed and lollipop it to first, or that's how you get beat by the Orioles. Or, you know, it's the little things, right? It's first and second, and Bo's up, and George Springer tries to take the extra base, and they don't score a run. You just can't do dumb things like that. That's what the Orioles are doing to you. Like, they're, you know, what's that saying? Or at least what I say is, hungry dogs run faster. Mm-hmm. Well, you're seeing it on the field with the Orioles. So, you know, it's you got to bring your A game. If you don't bring your A game, they are going to take you behind the woodshed. So, yeah, it's sort of the they're at the top of the mountain and everybody's looking up. Sure seems that way anyway.
Yeah, it was funny watching Jackson Holiday after our conversation with Ben McDonald yesterday, and is Jackson Holiday going to make the team? And Ben McDonald saying, well, you know, Orioles analysts kind of 50-50. They want him to learn second base, et cetera, et cetera. I watched that play and I thought, well, there's a guy that he knows that it's 50-50. And it was a perfect, I mean, if I'm Brandon Hyde and I'm watching that, that one play isn't going to decide whether Jackson Holiday makes the team. But, man, I look at that and I go, well, there's a kid that's aware of where he is. Like, there's a kid that's aware of what he's got to do.
I also watched Bassett have a real tough time with two strikes against that entire lineup. They didn't have their A lineup here. They had a couple of guys.
Right.
Rushman was here. You know, Holiday, if he's breaking the team.
How did he have trouble?
They just, like, they, you could tell the approaches totally changed. Like, they were taking Big Daddy hacks until two strikes. Like, they were trying to bridge those. The wind was blowing out. Like, mm-hmm. you get frisky in Florida when the wind's blowing in certain spots and I backspin a little bit. It's a cheap one. Like, I can do that. And when you got to two strikes, like, the athleticism took over. They could let the ball travel. That's what young teams do. Is now velocity, they don't have to cheat to get to it. They can let that thing travel, which would mean the breaking balls that you're trying to tunnel to trick a really good hitter no longer is a factor because of how young and how quick your bat is that you can let that hitter travel. That's what you saw. Like, it, boy, you just, if you don't bring your A game offensively, I mean, it sure looks like if they stay healthy in key places and some sophomore guys don't take a step back, I mean, it's screaming 110 wins, like, or somewhere right in that 105, 106, 107, somewhere in that range, just because of the athleticism and, you know, who's the number one guy in their rotation, which would make it easier for Grayson just to mm-hmm. sort of go out there and fill in the blanks. He's invented new pitches and, like, boy, you know, it's just, if you're Brandon, you just got everywhere you look. It's just, I could just write in a name. It just don't have to be the name. I can write in a name and I'm okay doing that.
In terms of the Jays lineup and in terms of their hitters, now you've been down there for a while now. As I said, you're down there for another day. Who's been the most impressive to you?
Dalton Varsho.
Okay.
I think is, you know, I know there was some talk about Alejandro Kirk, which, you know, look, he looks the same to me. Like, mm-hmm. All you want Kirky to do is the ball he should be hitting hard, hit it hard. Like, that's, and hopefully he's, you know, healthy enough and fresh enough to hit the ball in the air. That's the one thing with Kirky. But Dalton just looks like he's very confident. Like, he ain't overthinking it. It's not robotic where, you know, it's a stride separation. I have to get the foot down first. If I do that, my hands are going to follow. My hip will rotate in the way it's supposed to rotate. Like, you could actually see him working through it in the cleanup spot. And that's another thing. He ain't hitting cleanup. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to say cleanup to a guy and actually have him go out and not think he's the cleanup and try and be the cleanup hitter. And then you just put him in a five hole and sort of say, try and hit 25 homers. You know, he's going to steal 20 bags. He's going to play good defense, hit 25 homers. You hit 25 homers, the runs that you should be driving in will be there.
What, like, do you think would be,
you want from him?
What do you think would be a good batting average for him?
Like, I don't batting care. Do you care? Why do you care?
No, I'm just asking. What do you think?
The only person that seems to care on this team about batting average is the best hitter they have. That's Bo Bichette. Everybody, and then there's everybody else. And Dalton Varsho's in that group with everybody else. I don't care what he hits. You know, I want him not to hit what was he hit? 190 something with runners in scoring position, which I don't think he'll do that because he's not hitting cleanup. And I think he won't have as many at bats with that because Turner will get most of those, which will help that team dramatically. I saw him taking batting practice. The things he tries to do is a collision hitter. Collision hitters means they gain ground a lot with their front foot and the hips sort of follow, which I'm trying to maximize collision. I want everything when I hit it to just make as much force to the baseball as possible. Not a lot of people can do that because it's parts and it's a lot of moving, and he can do that consistently, which is what you see if you're watching him in batting practice. But yeah, I don't look, it's Dalton, stay within yourself. Don't overthink it and stick with Don Mattingly. That seems to have helped. They're sort of buddy-buddy. It seems like every time I see Dalton, I see Donnie Baseball. I guess that's not a bad thing.
No, not at all. If you're if there's a hitter you're going to try to emulate or try to follow, he would certainly be the guy. We're going to be joined by Joe Siddle in a few minutes, Blue Jays analyst with Sportsnet, ahead of this afternoon's game. Did you have a chance to watch the Dodgers and Padres at all this morning?
I watched a little bit on my cell phone on the drive over here. Yeah, the Dodgers gonna.
Yeah, man, I'm just about. Like, I've about had it with cheerleaders though. While the game's going on, they had cheerleaders while the game was going on, music while the game was going on, and a dude screaming. I just about had. I've had it with that.
You seriously are sort of right now like the weather in Toronto and the traffic. Like, you just, you know, it goes hand in hand with you and all of that.
It's bright and sunny right now, Barker. Barker, it's bright and sunny right now.
It is not. I looked at
it. It's bright and sunny. I'm looking out of the studio. It's bright and sunny right now. It's not going to be later.
I like the noise and the, it takes your mind off of struggles. And it makes it a little bit more fun. You got to remember, it's a grown-up playing a game. Games are supposed to be fun. What's wrong with that? You're the old guy. Get off my lawn. Don't like to have.
No, I don't mind. There's a lot. It sounds like an NBA game where you've got the organ, you know, an organ or whatever the hell it is playing. The dude brings the ball up the court. Yeah, it's annoying. But anyhow, but you're right.
That's the only thing you noticed. It had nothing to do with the talent.
No. I noticed.
Ran on that field.
No, I noticed the one thing I really noticed watching that game was the way the Dodgers just ground down Yu Darvish in that one inning. I think he had like 31 pitches or something like that. And they had, it was not the most consistent strike zone in the world. And boy, they were picking the right, you know, pitches that should have been called strikes to not swing at. It was really impressive. And I got to tell you, Teoscar Hernandez is going to enjoy being a Dodger.
Well, he's forgotten. Do you remember that Teoscar Hernandez is on the team?
I was just about to say that. I mean, obviously we do. He's the team. But you look in the lineup, you go, oh, yeah, Teoscar Hernandez is there. Anyhow.
Well, Teoscar looked good in the jersey anyway.
Well.
Should I have said that out loud? I shouldn't.
No, you shouldn't have said that out loud. Bowden Francis today, we talked about this, obviously. He's been one. I don't know if I'd call him a pleasant surprise because I think there were a lot of hopes for him going into the spring. I don't know if you've had a chance to talk to him yet, Kevin, but has anybody talked to you or have you noticed kind of any change in him since it's become obvious he's going to be in the team? Because, look, I think after his first outing, people were saying, okay, you know, there's a chance, and then Manoah gets hurt. There's a chance this is the guy who makes the team. And it seemed to me very quickly he went from a guy who is in the picture to a guy who has a chance to a guy who's going to be, when are we going to start him? Are we going to start him the fourth game against Tampa or in Houston or whatever? What are you hearing about him?
You got to look at the totality of his outings. Don't look at the first three innings. Look at the next two innings. He's a short burst guy. He's a big dude. He throws hard. It plays up his fastball. He's got a really good breaking ball. Like, he can be unpredictable. Like, he can pitch, but there's that scoreboard watching. And that's what they're trying to not have him do is, you know, they want him to pitch his way out of some trouble, and they're just not sure he can do that. Like, that's the, you know, perfect scenario is that you want Alek Manoah back being the fifth guy because they know he can do that if he's healthy, and, you know, the sinker command is there and the two different sliders is there. He should be fine. He'll get, at least give him a chance to win a baseball game. But the Bowden Francis thing is just, there's an unknown, there's a little bit of a cloud. If, you know, after the 60 pitch mark, how will the stuff look? Mm-hmm. And if he has to work through a couple of really good hitters, can he do it? They just haven't seen that. They just don't really know if he can do that. Is he a big league pitcher? Absolutely. Like, there's no question that he is a big leaguer. He has nothing else to figure out at the minor league level. He is a big leaguer. It's just that point of his is what makes this team better. Is it the long relief thing where they can use him four batter spurts or six batter spurts, or you're asking them for two or three innings instead of asking him in the five spot in the rotation to get you through two times, because now you got to use three pitches instead of two pitches. You got to add more quadrants. You got to pitch the dude's weaknesses. Like, there's a lot of things go into that. So yeah, there's some unknowns, but you can't argue the stuff. You can't argue, you know, his demeanor on the mound, and when he does get hit, this doesn't seem to bother him, which is what you have to have when you're trying to fight for spots and be the best you can be. So they like it because they don't have a lot of depth. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
The quality of stuff that's a coming, other than a Ricky Tiedemann, it really ain't there. So to have a dude like this that you could sort of lean on that can do multiple things, Swiss Army knife, I think is the right word to use for him. They're just trying to figure out what that right spot is.
What are they expecting from Alek Manoah realistically? Yeah, you know, he's not. I don't think he's done it. Is he on a mound now? I don't know if
he has been. Yes.
He has been on the mound
a couple of times.
Okay.
Seems to be like he's very happy. I saw him a little bit earlier. He looks healthy, like he's running around the way he's supposed to. It just seems like he'll be a couple of weeks behind Gosman. That's what it is, right? It's the pitch counts. It's the heart rate going up. Will it get past the mental hurdle of the hit batters? Will that be a thing, right? It's, you got to pitch in. That's sort of his thing, is the sinker in. It's not always command of the sinker in to a righty. It's, you got to throw it in there and not be afraid to move a dude's feet to make the slider way better. The two different sliders. Can he get past that mental hurdle? You know, the expectations, I think when he's back fully healthy and he's ramped up, I think there's some expectations there to give them a start that will give their team and their lineup a chance to win a game. If not, you got Bowden Francis, and there's some competition there. I've said this, and I've asked this. What if Bowden Francis is really good, and Alek Manoah comes back, and they say, well, would that be a great problem?
Yeah.
There you go.
Mr. Barker, we're going to let you scoot. Thanks for doing this. One more day, my friend. Enjoy the sun.
Thanks for that reminder, Jeff.
Enjoy the sun. Thanks, Kevin.
See you guys later.
Absolutely. Kevin Barker, co-host of this very show. A reminder that starting next Tuesday, we will be on from 2 to 4 Eastern on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 107. The first pitch today, the Jays and the Atlanta Braves. Jays lineup is Clement, Guerrero, Varsho, Vogelbach, Schneider, IKF, Escobar, Lucas, Servin, and Francis. And the Braves running out their A lineup: Acuna Jr., Albies, Riley, Olson, Ozuna, Harris, Murphy, Arcia, Kalenich, and Reyes Iglesias will make the start, probably an inning, to get his work in and then get out of there. And again, that is at 107 on Sportsnet. Joe Siddall's our Blue Jays analyst. He is in Dunedin with the Blue Jays. He joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, a reminder that every Friday we go to the back leg line. 416-413-3959. It's your opportunity to leave questions, comments, jokes for Barker. We will pick the best of them every Friday and answer the questions or comment on your observations. So again, the line is 416-413-3959. And that'll be we plan anyhow on making it a regular a regular Friday feature. The Jays are 8 sleeps away from starting the 2024 regular season. Normally at this time in spring training, I go, yeah, man, time's really flown by. But it seems like, for whatever reason, it seems like it's gone by really, really slowly this year. Maybe that's just me sort of getting up every morning and checking my email or checking my messages to see if anybody else has been hurt in spring training. But as I said, 8 sleeps left. Today, the Jays take on the Atlanta Braves. The game will be on Sportsnet at 107. You get a chance to see Bowden Francis, who's got this teammate, pitch for the Blue Jays. The Braves are running out their A lineup. The Jays are taking Clement, Guerrero, Varshall, Vogelbach, Schneider, IKF, Escobar, Lucas, and Servin along with them. As I said, we get closer and closer and closer to opening day in Tampa. Joe Siddall is our Blue Jays Central analyst. Indeed, he's our Blue Jays analyst, not just Blue Jays Central analyst. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Mr. Siddall, thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, Jeffrey. How are things up north?
Things are okay. We had to dust off the, had to brush the snow off the car this morning.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, 2 days in a row. But it's getting better. It's getting better. It's bright and sunny. I think we might have hit zero today. So it's all good. It's all good. By the time you get back, everything will be fine. Everything will be fine.
Hopefully everything is fine with this club, right?
Well, yes. You'd like to hope so. I know that Kevin Gausman threw a live BP today. We know the concern right now. I think we kind of have an idea, maybe Joe, where Gausman and maybe even Manoah are in terms of being available for the regular season. You know, knock on wood, it seems as if Kevin Gausman might instead of starting opening day, maybe he starts during the Houston series or something like that. It doesn't seem as if it's that serious. The biggest concern for me, though, are the two bullpen arms right now, with Jordan Romano experiencing elbow swelling, elbow soreness, and a forearm soreness for Eric Swanson. And look, John Schneider, I think, rightly has just said, hey, you know, Jordan Romano isn't going to throw for 3 days. We've given him an anti-inflammatory. We'll see where it goes from there. Eric Swanson, you know, there's no structural damage, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. What happens if the Jays don't have one of those two guys, especially Romano, out of the gate, though, Joe? Because these games come fast and furious.
Well, they do, and that was certainly not good news yesterday. John Schneider was answering a lot of questions and kind of just tucked those little bits of information in there. A couple of times they said, oh, and by the way, off the top, meanwhile, we're, I think, 5 or 10 minutes into the scrum already when he was meeting with the media. These are the days you do not envy major league managers, because you and I both know they just want to get the heck out of Florida as healthy as possible. And anytime I hear the words elbow and forearm, those aren't good. And oftentimes we hear these things reported, as Schneider mentioned, and you know, they kind of say they plan on being at minor and shouldn't be a problem. But yeah, there's nothing minor when you mention those words, especially the two very, very important guys at the back end of your bullpen. What's next is, who's next, right? I know you could look at the depth chart and you just keep thinking, you know, that obviously if something is really serious, they can go out and try to acquire somebody late here, but that's not easy at this point in spring. But you hope it is minor, and you hope they don't miss much time, if any. And, I mean, you look at the bullpen and the way things were structured. We came into spring training thinking about Francis, Mitch White, or on that kind of, are they the long guys? Are they available if Manoah is not available, which clearly is the case now. So they'll both be in the mix, but then you have to start looking at the Nate Pearsons, Zach Pops, right? And, you know, it goes on and on. We can go a lot further, but we don't want to go too much further, mm-hmm. because now you're, you know, that's what depth charts are, right? The deeper you go, the less quality you're getting. And it'll be tough. That's why you have it, but it's, you're going to tell me you're starting the season without Pearson and or Swanson, or Romano and or Swanson. That's not good news, because it's so important at the back end. But, you know, I think it was one of the broadcasts, one of the games this spring, we put up a board of these relievers. And I think it was Jimmy Garcia, Meza, Swanson, I think the three of them had career highs in innings and games last year. Mm-hmm. Romano was right up there. I think he's had three straight seasons now, 60 games or whatever. And we talked about how healthy this pitching staff was last year, both the rotation and these bullpen guys. It's almost like all spring I've been just kind of walking on eggshells, waiting right. for news like this. And sure enough, now it's coming. First it was Mano, and then it was Gosman. Now it's the reliever. So, yeah, not good news, especially at this point when you're just over a week away from opening day.
I mean, it would seem to me that the focus falls right away on Chad Green. And, you know, we just had Kevin on, and Kevin was talking about, you know, a conversation he had with Pete Walker. And it seems, Joe, very much as if they've kind of decided that they're just going to shelve the idea of getting him to throw a breaking pitch and get him to focus on fastball and slider. Chad Green's a veteran guy. You know, I never know what to read into a veteran spring training. I always kind of think I like my relievers to have good spring trainings just because I know that when I'm going to use those guys, if a starter has a bad spring, that's fine. If a starter has a couple of bad outings in the spring, that's fine. To me, it's the same thing with a position player. But, man, I've only got a few opportunities if I'm a reliever to get the heart rate up and to face actual competition. If it doesn't work, I kind of worry about that. Where are you with Chad Green right now?
Well, I came into spring training thinking that Chad Green is going to save games for this team this year. And, you know, that whether it's injury or poor performance or rust, whatever the case is with Romano closing games, he will get chances and he will save games for this team this season. Now, has it been a good spring? No, he's been spotty. Now, I think the reason I felt that way is his track record. I look at track records, and mm-hmm. I don't like to look at 4 weeks in spring training or 6 weeks in spring training. I like to look at 6 months last year. Now, of course, that's different with Green because he came back from the Tommy John surgery. But the best case was that he came back last year, was able to pitch, kind of got back acclimated, adrenaline flowing into games and all. And that's why I thought that would have been a great foundation for him to now have a great offseason, full workout offseason, full spring training, and hopefully get back to being the Chad Green that we remember seeing in a Yankee uniform for so many years there. That's the guy that I thought it's going to help this bullpen big time this year. Now, results haven't been there this spring. It's been spotty for sure. I still don't put a ton of stock in spring training. I don't do it for hitters offensively. I don't necessarily do it for pitchers either because, and you know, the wind's blowing, that's gusting down here every day. There are just a lot of things that are not the same as the regular season. On the hitter side, I mean, pitchers aren't sequencing pitches and game planning against your weaknesses. It's just not happening because there's too much going on. The pitchers are getting their work in. But for Chad, I hope this is just part of his buildup. And I can see a guy like that. Now, you know, I don't watch his stuff every time he pitches. I had a couple of games that we had televised, but he's basically a two-pitch guy. He's a fastball breaking ball guy. Now, the breaking ball's a key pitch for him because it plays off that heater, but the fastball's his pitch. Like, that's his number one bread and butter, rides it at the top of the zone, and that's where I remember talking to him early in the spring, and his big thing was getting back on the mound and getting the feel. I think we take for granted that these guys are all major league pitchers. And we just think like in spring training, it should all be like it's July or June or July, and there should be a midseason form. It's not the case. I had a chat with Tim Mazza this morning because he didn't look good at all in his last outing. His velocity was down. And I asked him, are you okay? Like we talked about on the broadcast. And he said, oh yeah. And he had no, nothing like injury wise. He said, I'm just really out of sync. My body and just not, it's not moving right. He needs to speed things up in his delivery. You don't always mm-hmm. hear those things.
Yeah.
But for that particular pitcher, that was the case. And I'm sure for Chad, it's going to be something along those lines too. Just still trying to get that feel and be in sync. Now, bad spring, bad 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games, whatever, he could be dominant opening day against the Rays. Like, that kind of stuff can happen. There is still another week. He's going to pitch again probably a couple times, and you hope that he can iron out those last kinks and be ready to rock and roll.
Joe, do you, when you see what this lineup has done, and again, we throw out the caveat that it's spring, but in the games in which the Jays have had their regular lineup out there, you know, particularly I'm thinking about the top five, I would think if you're John Schneider and Don Mattingly, you've got to like what you've seen from them. And again, it's Florida, it's spring, but there seems to be a little more power there. There seems to be more going on at the top of the lineup than we saw last year.
Yeah, I will be very cautiously optimistic. And you give credit where credit is due. The guy's been playing well and having good ABs and hitting. That's wonderful. And again, I put more stock into what they did over 6 months last season. And what that tells me is, where shall we start? At the top, right?
Mm-hmm.
George Springer needs to be closer to an 800 OPS guy than 700, right? I think we'd all agree on that. Alejandro Kirk has to be closer to 800 than 700. Vladdy, we'd like to see him closer to 900 OPS than 800, or whatever metric or number you want to use. But you know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. These guys need to be better. What we're seeing from Dalton Varsho, should he and could he be more of that 740, 750 OPS guy with some power and plays the great defense and base runs the way he does? That's the guy I think they hoped to trade for, not the 670 OPS guy that we saw last year a lot. So he's worked on things. Does he look better? Yes, hands down, he looks better. But I need to see that between March 28th in the regular season games and the end of the season against real pitchers who are executing game plans, who teams are meeting, having game plans and meetings with about opposing hitters, going over heat maps, all the preparation that goes into attacking hitters, because we know it's way more in the regular season than it is now. Zach Eflin will spend a lot more time going over Blue Jays hitters for that opener than they will for a game in February or March. So I need to see it in the regular season, but by all accounts, this is what you want to see. I mean, you'd rather see what you're seeing than your top five, six hitters having 600 OPSs, right?
Joe, what do you see right now as question marks around this team in terms of roster spots?
Well, I think it's at that bottom of the roster and this whole clouded infield situation, right? I don't really, the way things are now, unless something happens here in the final week, I don't really see a fourth outfielder per se that's necessary. And that's where, like, a Nathan Lucas for me, it's too bad for him.
Ernie Clement's starting in left today, by the way, just to further to your point.
Ernie Clement is on my team, yes. And that unclouds the picture a little bit. I think Ernie Clement does that. I mean, I am still one, like, my opening day lineup, well, it's not my opening day lineup, but what I see as the opening day lineup right now is with Biggio, say, at second and kind of Fluff at third. You know, we talked over the offseason, I think. I was hoping there'd be somebody else at third base for opening day for the Blue Jays, and they would be figuring out second base, but they're going to probably figure out second and third base. I guess it's the way they're going, and they're going to, again, focus on that defense and contact ability with the hitters that they have. I think Davis Schneider's a guy I would keep, but that's just me. I like the pop that he provides. I like throwing him at second base one day against the lefty, maybe left field. I don't mind that. Maybe he's that bad off the bench against the lefty. I know the Rays don't have tons of lefties, but that's looking beyond the opening series. I like him on my roster for that reason. I don't really need to see Davis Schneider go have a 900, 1,000 OPS in AAA anymore. We know what his weakness is. He knows what his weakness is. See if he can figure it out. I just like the damage that the damage potential that he provides with that bat. So those are the guys I like. Escobar would be on the outs there. Espinal is going to be a fascinating decision. What they do, they've paid him. They tender him a contract. So if he's around, that's going to make things very interesting. But I think the guys that you mentioned, that I've just mentioned, can kind of fill in as that fourth outfielder when need be. So I don't think you necessarily need a clear outfielder, because Biggio can go out there, Clement can go out there, Schneider can go out there, IKF can go out there.
Right. Is there any way Joey pushes the envelope here and makes the team out of spring? Or are we, you know, should we maybe expect him to maybe be a guy who comes up and joins the team in time, if he's healthy, in time for the home opener? I mean, maybe that's a little bit of the romantic in me, but I've got to think that you wouldn't mind, if you're the Blue Jays, having Joey Votto run out on the Rogers Center on opening day and be announced, you know, as a member of the team.
Well, I would, you know, when Joey signed, and I thought, here's this guy that's 40 years old. We know age matters in this game. But what I've seen from him early on, I've watched a couple sessions of his batting practice, and I saw the home run in his debut there. I mean, he was ready to play first base for five innings, I thought I heard, before he stepped on that bat. So, I mean, the fact that he was ready to play, and I'm sure he would have built up from there. I haven't heard an update on the ankle. I think he's supposed to get into a game tomorrow, maybe, whatever the case may be. I mean, there's a week left. If he played a handful of games, there's no reason why he can't build up to that. Now, if they don't want to rush him and he doesn't look like the Joey Votto we want to see, then, of course, it can be delayed. But, you know, I watched him take big BP for a couple of days, and I kind of liked what I saw. And you can only gauge that so much as well, but I just liked the way he was handling the bat. He looked like the Joey Votto, using all field.
That's exactly what Barker said. That's exactly what Barker said.
And, you know, it was that day, I think he went over and hit the home run, and I saw the home run thinking, that's that good direction. Like, everything was good. So I thought, if he can keep building from that, I'll take that bat 7 days a week over Vogelbach. And I've been a proponent of having Vogelbach on this roster before Votto was signed, because, once again, that left-handed damage off the bench, maybe. That's something they haven't had. Guy that can come in and maybe tie a ball game late with one swing of the bat. But if you're talking Votto or Vogelbach, for me, I'll take Votto every day of the week just because of the entire at-bat that he provides. It's a very good all-around hitter with power potential.
Last question for us. Danny Jansen, Buck Martinez telling us yesterday that he talked to Danny. Danny seems to be in good spirits. Apparently he might be throwing on Saturday. You know, you're a former catcher. I'm sure you can imagine what it must feel like to have that type of injury and you know, the impact it would have both in terms of hitting and defense. What's your read on where Danny is right now? And are the Jays, have they covered themselves enough there? Even if Danny needs 2 weeks to get ready.
Well, all you can do is cover yourself the way they have, right? They've got a couple of guys in camp that have some big league experience, and that's why you do that. And, between Henry and Servin, one of them will get that opportunity, I think. But I saw Danny on the mounds, the bullpen mounds this morning, and he was doing some physical stuff, a lot of like leg work stuff from his crouch and hopping around stuff. What's he doing? He's keeping his legs in shape, right? You got to keep your body in game shape when your right hand and wrist is not going to work for you right now. So he's not going to be able to throw. He's not going to be able to swing a bat. He'll be able to do all kinds of receiving, which is great. So he can do a lot of things. It's just he won't be able. I don't know what would be worse, your throwing hand so that he can't throw and hit, or if you're catching hands. So, I mean, he's going to have to, once that thing gets better, build up his arm strength too, right? Like, get back to throwing. I can't imagine he's going to be throwing a baseball anytime real soon. So the buildup is the big one, right? It's kind of like when we were talking about Gausman, just those little setbacks in spring training. It's a setback because it sets you back to where you were, and you got to build back up, and that takes time. So that'll be the case with Danny. We'll see how the bone heals, right? Who knows how that happens, but I mean, it's going to be time. And all you can do is hope Alejandro Kirk can play as much as possible. I don't think you want to ask too much of him, but he's a guy that I've been very impressed with this spring, and I think that bat is back, and that is key also for this team.
Yeah, everybody seems to be very pleased with where Alejandro Kirk is. You know, I made the point a little earlier, too. Sometimes I think, you know, these guys are human beings, and you know, we know that, you know, it was a first-time father last year, and you know, there were, I don't know if there were complications, but, you know, he was late getting into spring training. There was a lot going on. And, you know, it's a lifestyle change. You can be a professional athlete, but it's still a lifestyle change. And you know, maybe we kind of overlooked that with Kirky.
Well, yeah, I think he started late. He wasn't ready and never really got into the best swing mode, best shape. Throughout the course of the season, it's like he was playing catch up all year.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing now is back to that controlled at bat, controlled move to the baseball. He's back under control, seeing the ball well. That's when he's taking his walks. That's when he's zoning in. I thought last year, because of all of that, everything was a rush, and he knew he wasn't right. He knew the swing wasn't right. So what guys do is they cheat a little bit. They try to cheat to get to the fastball. They start early, and that just creates all kinds of problems. He was never really that right. What I'm seeing now is more like the Kirky we saw when he was a Silver Slugger. So hopefully he can be on that path again.
Good stuff, Joe. Appreciate this. See you soon.
All right, Jeff. Take care. See you up north soon. Thanks.
Absolutely. Joe Siddle, our Blue Jays analyst on Sportsnet 107. First pitch today, Jays and Atlanta Braves. Bowden Francis on the mound for the Jays. Ernie Clement, Vladdy Jr., Varsho, Vogelbach, Schneider, IKF, Escobar, Lucas Servin. Making the trip to take on the Braves. And the Braves will be running out basically their opening day lineup. Acuna Jr., Albies, Riley, Olson, Ozuna, Harris, Murphy, Arcia, Kalinic. So it'll be a good chance for Bowden Francis to see how he stacks up against, I think, I'm going to say it, best lineup in baseball. That's it for us. Mr. Barker will be back alongside us tomorrow, or he'll be back us tomorrow from Florida. A reminder, 416-413-3959, the back leg line, it's open. Leave your questions or comments. We will get to them on Friday. As always, leave a rating and review if you're listening to us via podcast, and we'll chat tomorrow.